Holla. That was messed up.
Chris is 100% going to leave that in, by the way.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4056 of the Bugle audio newspaper for a visual world for the week beginning Monday, the 15th of January, 2018, with me, Andy Zaltzman, the man who is to professional pole vaulting what Donald Trump used to be to the American presidency, in that I'm obviously not cut out for the job, but secretly I'd quite like to give it a go, just out of curiosity. And if I ever do it, people will enjoy my inevitable fall. This week, I'm joined by two hemispheres worth of Bugle co-hosts from the northernmost half of a planet in the entire history of the world. It's Nish Kumar.
Welcome hello, back. Andy. Hello, Buglers.
Welcome back. We will get to your latest showbiz story shortly. And from the south, where water goes the other way up taps, or something like that. All I know is that physics can't be asked to do shit properly once you cross the equator because, well, what's the f***ing point? It's Tom Ballard!
Hello, Andy. Hello, Nish. Hello, Buglers.
Welcome back, Tom. It's been a while since you've been on the show. How's Australia?
Australia's doing fine, thank you. Chugging along. Still in the Southern Hemisphere. They refuse to change that, but we're focused on that. We're beating you at cricket, I'm told. Someone informed me of that in your face, you stupid cricket lovers who are English. The end.
It's really unfortunate that the person who informed you that was Andy off air.
Yeah, I mean, the reason you were booked on this week is you were the Australian in Australia least likely to mention the Ashes.
Yay! Aussie, Aussie, Aussie! Oi, oi, oi! You are wanker cricket.
Listeners should know that when we talked about the Ashes before we started recording, Tom said to Andy, "How's the Ashes?" in what we interpreted as being a sort of mocking tone. But no, he was genuinely asking.
He did not know
the result.
Too soon, too soon. So, Nish. Last night you participated in the flagship current affairs chinwag question time.
Yes.
How did that work out?
Well, Andy, for reasons that were unclear to everyone involved, including me, I was on the question time panel yesterday, which is a sort of political talk show here where the audience asks questions of a panel of experts, and in this case, me. One of the other people on the panel was a man called Piers Morgan. I don't know how familiar you are with Piers, Tom.
Painfully familiar.
I don't know whether either of you have sat and looked directly into the face of a man that you are on the record as having described as the result of what happens if someone injected a gammon steak with white privilege. But let me tell you, it is awkward, especially when you then restate that claim on air. Oh.
Was he ever liked at all? Did he have any likability at all? And because then he took over Larry King's show in the US, right? And people, I assume, in Britain also hated him for that, in the classic kind of screw you for making success in any other part of the world situation, which we have like in Australia too, of course. Yeah. Is there anyone out there who thinks, yes, Piers, you speak for the people and I agree with you?
Yeah, there is. And his name is Piers Morgan. Also, speaking of people who have betrayed their country, I finally came face to face with John Oliver, Andy.
Oh, right.
And it happened where we always knew it would happen, on the football pitch.
Right. And how did that work out? Because I couldn't play that week.
Well, I don't know where John is, Andy, but I knew where he was at the time because I'd popped him in my pocket.
Oh, really?
For the proceeding. Although, apart from one regrettable slip-up where he gave me some smack talk and I responded by raising my finger to my lips in the classic shushing motion. But unfortunately, while my back was turned, I ignored the fact that the other team had a clear run on goal and scored.
Right. Never mind. The trash-talking's more important.
The trash-talking is fun.
At that level of the game.
John Oliver's amazing at trash-talking on the football field. His secret move, I believe, is to awkwardly ask you about the sexual assault allegations that have been brought up against you. Just bring a lot of tension onto the pitch. It's insane,
man. You ruined that game with Hoffman.
This is the Bugle for the week beginning the 15th of January. We're recording on Friday the 12th of January, the anniversary of the exact same day as anniversaries so often are, the 12th of January in 1866, when the Royal Aeronautical Society was formed in London. This was 1866. That's 37 years before the Wright brothers did their first powered flight, I think I'm right in saying. So the Royal Aeronautical Society spent quite a lot of their early decades just throwing food at each other and making notes of the different parabolas of chicken sandwiches, cucumbers and raspberry trifles, and making paper glarts, which were the same as paper planes, but they didn't know what aeroplanes were yet, so they just called them glarts. On the 15th of January, 1759, the British Museum opened.
Oh, yes.
And over the next 150 years, the British Empire mushroomed in size by hundreds of percents, which just goes to show, if there's one thing we hate in this country, it is an empty display cabinet.
It's a former Bugle catchphrase to refer to the British Museum as an open crime
scene. Yes, yeah. Yeah.
It really is like the future of the maybe the Law and Order or CSI franchise.
As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight to the men. This week, we have a very special competition for you, Buglers, in association with the Bilderberg Group.
Oh, my God.
Secret conglomerate of high-powered political and economic subterfugitives who essentially control the world. We are offering our Bugle listeners the chance to win a place in the Bilderberg Group's influential steering committee. Brush shoulders with the rich and generally not very famous in the notoriously unaccountable group's inner sanctum as you take your place at the high table of covert discussions about the planet's political and economic future. This is, Buglers, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to wield behind-the-scenes power to shape the future of your planet whilst consolidating your own personal financial power base and ensuring that your priorities remain the world's priorities. What a prize. It is a 5-year term on the steering committee, and to win that, you simply have to finish this sentence in fewer than 20 words. I think it is best if the biggest decisions affecting the planet are conducted covertly by an elite cabal of bankers, politicians and oligarchs because... dot, dot, dot. So send that in and we will judge the best entry. We will win their place on the Bilderberg Group steering committee. Send your entries by email to hellobuglers@thebuglepodcast.com. Do mark your email Bilderberg in the subject box. Or by pigeon to Coop 4056 at Bugle Headquarters, London. Or by Ouija board to Andy's late great-great-uncle, Furnished. That section is going in the bin.
That is an excellent competition.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll enter yourself.
Top story out of Australia now. Tourist unable to poo after sexy Roo blocks her from loo. Award-winning comedy over here, guys. Last month, in John Forest National Park, just outside of Perth, a French tourist was blocked from using a public toilet by a sexy kangaroo striking a seductive come-hither pose in the toilet's entrance. This is all anybody's talking about in Australia. It's the most the Australian story in the world. Have you seen the photo of the ruin question, Andy?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
I've seen the baby photo. Not that I can Google it now because I think it would be shut down by a safe search function.
The sexiest goddamn kangaroo I've ever seen in my life. It is off the charts. That is the hottest piece of sexy roo tail out there, and he wants it too. He's not skippy. He's slutty, baby. Oh, I haven't been aroused since reading Blinky Bill as a kid. Oh, the things I'd do to that roo if he let me into his pouch. Oh, damn, baby. Let me be your dirty little joey boy. I want to hop all over you all night long. Oh, you like that, baby? Yeah. Sorry, fellas, it's been a while.
Yeah. What's been a while, Tom?
Just anyone, just anything, any warm-blooded.
Since you last committed
anything.
A sex crime. No, it's not a real country, Tom. You can't tell me that Australia is a real country with
this
sort of
news
stories.
We have real news stories. It was a really sexy kangaroo, Nish, and she needed to get to the toilet. Come on, mate.
I mean, I think... It's a very... shut up about the cricket or this show is over. I've already had to do one podcast about the cricket this week. That was more than enough. I'm very concerned about this kangaroo story. To me, it shows that the animal kingdom is getting more confident, more cocky. They've seen the divisions within our species and they are thinking this could be our chance to get rid of those imperialist pigs. And it was interesting what this French tourist said. She said... Australia is such a beautiful country with the perfect weather, and I would move here if I could. Well, I think she should give it a go, because with all due respect, she does look like she has all the required paperwork not to end up in a cell on Manus Island or Nauru with 60 other people who also think Australia is beautiful and would move there if they could. And by paperwork, I mean white face and a T-shirt with the I'm definitely not a refugee slogan on it.
That's all we ask of people. It's not too much to sort out. Nish, if you get a chance to have a look at that, you're welcome back any time, mate. The tourist, she's a 30-year-old French lady, and she said afterwards, it was so funny, I couldn't stop laughing when I saw it, was posed like that. I wouldn't have been surprised if it had said, hey girl, what's up? What the hell are you talking about, you sick French weirdo? It's a kangaroo! You wouldn't be surprised if a kangaroo said English words to you? And not just any words, creepy, flirty, disturbing words. That's sexual harassment. Hashtag me roo. Hashtag me roo.
That is unbelievably strong work. I didn't realise that the film Titanic was so huge in the kangaroo community.
It was
because
huge,
looking
yeah.
at that photo, it is absolutely a homage to Kate Winslet's infamous nude pose from that movie. I assumed the caption was, paint me like one of your French animals.
Very hot at the moment in Australia as well. That's a huge story over here. And How hot, Tom? Yeah. We're frying the brains of bats.
Oh, right, okay. That's
that hot.
Right.
Hundreds of fur-covered flying fox bats, which lack sufficient canopy cover and shade in Australia's suburbs, died outside Sydney over the weekend as temperatures soared to 117 degrees Fahrenheit, the hottest it's been since 1939. Check out this sentence, okay? The Camden Advertiser reports as of Monday 204 dead bats, mostly babies, whose brains had been boiled, had been collected in Campbelltown.
It feels like something out of Revelations.
Fake news. Those bats weren't cut out for it, mate. They're not cut out for a new globally warmed world. But I tell you, it's so hot in Australia right now, guys. It's so hot, Nish and Andy. It is so hot.
How hot, Tom?
How hot, Tom?
How hot?
It's so hot, no one can even be bothered being racist here anymore. Oh, it's so hot in Australia right now.
How hot, Tom? How hot?
It's so hot, Nicole Kidman's nose has melted. Oh, it's so hot right now in Australia, Nish, I tell you what.
How hot, Tom? How hot?
It's so hot we're becoming delusional and finding kangaroos f***able. That's how hot it is there right now.
Well, on the subject of this, the French kangaroo blocked toilet lady, describing...
as I believe her full name is.
describing Australia's perfect weather. I mean, how perfect can weather be if the brains of bats have been literally boiling in their heads because it's so f***ing hot? Well, I guess it's lovely weather if you'd like to be able to brew a nice cup of green tea without having to use anything other than the ambient air temperature to heat your water. And it's lovely weather if you like bats to cook themselves. So
it's a bloody good thing Gotham City isn't located in New South Wales.
I believe that woman saw all those baby bats with boiled brains lying all over the ground and she thought, these bats are trying to f*** me right now.
I mean, I've got very little sympathy for the bat. It's an idiot of a species. It's brought it on itself, the unloved evolutionary bastard child of the turd and the umbrella. If it had spent more of its time evoluting, working out how to invent air conditioning or the sun hat like us humans did, instead of majoring on hanging upside down from stuff like a giant testicle and echolocation, it wouldn't be in this mess, would it? Would not be in this mess. It was 55 degrees Celsius on the field in the sun during the final test match in Sydney at one point, or in old measurements, 649-7 declared. whereas up in the Northern Hemisphere, the bomb cyclone that we reported on last week with Hari Kondabolu right in the middle of the bomb cyclone in New York had the opposite effect. It had sharks, iguanas and prosecution lawyers freezing to death. Sorry, not prosecution lawyers, alligators. My mistake. Always getting them mixed up.
It's over, right? It's over.
What, the world?
Yeah. When one half is freezing to death and the other half is cooking its livestock,
yeah,
we're f***ed.
Yeah. That's basically the planet is now a kitchen. yeah. Tom, I understand there's been a continued dispute over Australia Day, which is
Invasion forthcoming on the... Day, Andy!
Sorry, right. Because, yeah, it commemorates, well, the 26th of January, 1788, the proclamation of British sovereignty over the eastern seaboard of what is now Australia under the finders keepers, existing inhabitants weepers rule of European exploration. So it's known as Invasion Day, Survival Day and Sunburn Day, which was the first Brits getting roasted in the Australian sun in 1788. So what's what are the options for an alternative?
Well, any other day, some would argue. Oh, right, okay. Literally any other f***ing day. That's right. Quite popular. But no, the people who want to retain Australia Day on January 26th seem quite set on that. It is a very complicated debate. Some people think that, you know, celebrating our country on that day is disrespectful because the 26th marked the beginning of invasion and genocide and the oppression of the First Peoples, and other people are white. So it's very complicated. And I don't know where to come down on either side of that. So it's very tricky.
I mean, you could instead mark the start of the third test of the very first Ashes series it was in January 1883 the third test began, which Australia lost, setting in motion the greatest cricketing rivalry of all time. And that game began on the 26th of January, so you should switch it to that.
Was that the first ever time when they burnt the wicket stumps or whatever the hell they did?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
The wicket stumps.
That's near enough, Tom. That's near enough. It's not going to talk about
it. It sounds like you put the Wisden Cricket Annual through a bad translation engine. Will you throw the ball rocket down to the wicket stumps? Strike it with your whacking stick.
This reminds me of when I used to pretend to be straight. Oh, can I put you on your lady breast? Will, spread your lady legs, please, and I will enjoy putting my man straight tongue there.
Family show, family show. Well, on the subject of ladies, some very important breaking news from here in the UK. The company which provides the Queen's lingerie has lost its royal warrant after former owner published her autobiography. The company, which has embrassiered the royal frontisterion since 1960, lost the rights to encapsulate Her Majesty's capsules. June Keaton, the luxury bra fitter, who publishes autobiography entitled Storm in a D-Cup, said she would never reveal details of what went on during the fittings. All she'd revealed in the book, she claimed, was that she had visited the palace.
A euphemism?
Well, I mean, the palace was not impressed. She also said, I only ever said I went there, not what happened. I have never, ever spoken about what I do there with her, or with the Queen Mother, or Princess Margaret, which does raise the question, what the f*** do you do there with the Queen Mother, and Princess Margaret?
Holy cow, I can't wait for this series of The Crown. Two girls, one crown.
This is 50 Shades of Grey. This is the ultimate 50 Shades of Grey, I think.
I've never been involved in a conversation where it feels like everyone involved could be beheaded.
Of course, you can understand the palace closing ranks on this because the existence of the Royal Mamariels has been a closely guarded secret for many decades. And we must emphasise that Buckingham Palace insists there is no proof of any bosomalities belonging to any current, past or future member of the royal family, although contemporary portraiture does suggest that Charles II's wife, Catherine of Braganza, in the 17th century may have had one or more chestural exturbances. But that is unconfirmed as we speak.
It is reshuffle-ageddon.
Right.
This week, Theresa May has reshuffled her cabinet. It's not so much rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic as it is rearranging the food menus on the Titanic. Just a completely pointless gesture by a government that is on its way towards hitting the iceberg. They have not really done anything substantial to the front bench. They've not moved on a few of the leading MPs that are incredibly unpopular with the government. David Davis, who's the Brexit secretary, who seems to have done absolutely no work. Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary and cartoon racist, who has failed to get a British citizen currently imprisoned in Iran anything other than more press attention, which is something that he and only he craves. And then there's Jeremy Hunt, who's the health secretary who's presided over the worst crisis this winter in the National Health Service's history. He has not been removed from his post, Andy and Tom. He has, in fact, had his responsibilities expanded. He is now the Secretary for Health and Social Care. The rumour is that he was planning to be fired, but at a meeting, he simply refused. Now, that is no doubt a baller move. Speaking of someone who has been fired from multiple jobs, I never had the brass neck to simply look my soon-to-be ex-employer in the eye and just say no. Also, Jeremy Hunt has really struggled. And again, as someone who's struggled in various jobs, I sympathise with him a lot. And giving him more responsibility is probably not what the doctor, or in his case, the ex-doctor who's now left for Australia for more money, ordered.
Keeping Jeremy Hunt at health again, when she could have shuffled him after the election last year as well, suggests this is not so much a reshuffle as a prank. I mean, comedy of repetition is all very well in the right context. I mean, in fact, I blame Stuart Lee for this reshuffle, to be honest. This is basically like hiring the same babysitter for the fourth time after the first three times he got your children addicted to gambling, whiskey and then golf.
If anything, they should have reduced his responsibility, because clearly health as a sort of portfolio is too demanding for him. So Jeremy Hunt should have been elected the first ever Secretary of State for sneezing and tennis elbow.
That is his constituency, actually.
Lovely,
lovely little villages in Gloucestershire.
The Daily Mail, which for the uninitiated is very much the anti-Bugle to the Bugle's Bugle, has got very upset about this whole thing. They led with the front with a headline on their front page the day after the reshuffle that read "Massacre of Middle-Aged Men." Now, turns out what they were referring to was the fact that the number of men in the government has fallen from 89 right. to a frankly catastrophic 82.
No!
Barely discernible.
As right. for the average age, it has plummeted from 52 to a low jeans wearing, rap music enjoying age of 51. It's absolutely... it's a massacre over here, Tom. You can't believe what's going on. My concern with this is that the Daily Mail does not know the meaning of the word massacre. And they think massacre is a slight reduction in something.
Right.
And the St. Valentine's Day massacre was just a year where greeting card sales were slightly down.
I mean, I'm very concerned about this because, you know, as a middle-aged white man from the home counties, I don't know, who is representing me in government? When will my voice be heard?
The full cabinet remains 74% male and 96% white.
Yay! Champion! Ace champion!
What I want to know, Andy, is when will the Bugle return to those sort of stats? I cannot yeah. believe it. You've had Johnny foreigners and Johnny women all over this place.
Well, yeah, and as we've heard already today, Tom Ballard himself is an abomination in the eyes of the law. So,
thank you. Gosh, that took way longer than normal.
Yeah, no, I'm not with you. Good to have a catchphrase, isn't it? yeah, why do you think there's a heatwave, Tom? Why do you think there's a heatwave? Join the dots.
We did get gay marriage last year. Yeah, I guess he's taking that out on the bats. That's brutal.
Yeah, that's right. That is biblical stuff, isn't it? You legalise gay marriage and bats' brains boil in their heads. Just wait for a Jewish guy to walk from Australia to New Zealand now. I'm telling you, it's going to happen.
Referring to him as a Jewish guy.
Moses, he was on his...
What's that Jewish guy going on about? About the beggars? There's a couple of subsidiary stories right. involving the Daily Mail this week. One is that Virgin Trains have actually banned the sale of the Daily Mail, infringing people's freedom of speech, Andy.
Right.
Or, I mean, depending on your perspective on it, either it's an infringement of freedom of speech or it's a non-f***ing story. Basically, Virgin Trains have sell newspapers on their trains, and they have decided to not sell the Daily Mail. Now, there's a little bit of confusion over this, because this story apparently originally has its roots in about 6 months ago, when they took a decision as a company to stop selling the Daily Mail because it was selling so poorly. But now Virgin have dressed this up as a philosophical stand, because Virgin themselves have gone through a couple of pieces of unpleasant PR over the last few months, because as a company they're actually in the process of attempting to sue the NHS, and their train fares have actually massively increased. So it does feel like a bit of a PR stunt. But obviously the Daily Mail have lost their goddamn mind and described this as a sort of freedom of speech. Now, Andy, I'm a non-driving stand-up comedian, yeah. So I take the train all the time. Now, I like to read The Guardian and Empire magazine. Neither of those are available on Virgin Trains. So what I do is I go to these magical places called news agents,
right,
that we have in train stations,
yeah,
and I just buy them and I take them on the train with me because I'm a f***ing adult.
Right, okay.
And I don't stand there screaming about my freedom of speech being violated.
Right.
It's a non-story. Also,
would you describe the lack of Daily Mails as a massacre on the trains? Has it been a massacre?
Yeah. There's been an absolute...
It's like living in a police state, isn't it? Except you're still able to buy the newspaper somewhere else if you want it.
Yeah. Soon it'll be the Daily Female if the bloody PC police have their way.
What I can't understand about this story is the idea that anyone was buying the Daily Mail on the train anyway. Because you thought, if you're sitting on a British train, why would you want to make yourself even angrier about the state of the nation by reading the Daily Mail?
Double negative, Andy.
Yeah.
That's out too.
Maybe they cancel each other out.
Yeah, they cancel each other out, yeah. The only thing I would say is that if I was the Daily Mail, and I think we can all agree I am, I would maybe take a long, hard look at myself. Because if a company like Virgin, with at best questionable ethical practices, is making moral judgments on you, how shitty must you be? It's like being told by Skeletor that you need to be nicer.
Yeah. Well, I think that was really the tipping point for Islamic State, is when they got told off by Saudi Arabia. That was when you really think, no, that's something's gone very badly.
Oh, guys, take the flags down. We've definitely taken this too far. In further British arsehole news, Toby Young has been at the centre of more controversy this week. Tom, how aware are you guys of Toby Young? I'm interested to know how far he's travelled.
No, what is he? He's an absolute arsehole wanker man who's in charge of university things.
Well, he was appointed to a board that's overseeing parts of tertiary education in this country. And he, for a little bit of background on him, he describes his previous job before he was involved in education as journalistic provocateur, which is, of course, from the Latin meaning total for money. He's part of the sort of subgenre of for money that sort of plaguing British discourse at the moment, and not plaguing British discourse, but also currently residing in the White House. But he said a lot of contentious things very deliberately in newspaper columns and on Twitter. And that's all sort of fine. You know, we've all expressed opinions and, you know, we've all utilised our freedom of speech. The problem is that when it came to him being involved in education, it turns out that some of those comments came back to bite him on the arse. He talked a lot about women's breasts and also at one point disguised himself as a woman to try and pick up lesbians, something which he did for an article he was subsequently paid for. And he's now been forced, he says, by an angry mob to step down from his post in the education board. He's, you know, well, I'm a comedian. I've said some truly reprehensible things, most of them on this podcast. I value my use of freedom of speech, but I do realise that if at some point I suffered a sort of catastrophic brain injury that fundamentally changed my personality and decided I wanted to be involved in education, some of those things might come back to bite me in the arse. If I ever did take up a job in a school, I imagine my hearing would just involve people playing extracts of this podcast, including the conversation we just had about the Queen's boobs.
Provocateur, provocateur.
American news now, and, well, it wouldn't be a day ending in the syllable day or a year ending in something three digits following two at the moment. If Donald Trump did not say something that just made you slightly regret the evolution of life. According to the Washington Post, in a meeting with lawmakers concerning immigration, he said, "Why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here?" Now, I am never one to defend Donald Trump unnecessarily. But can a man not ask a rhetorical question without everyone assuming he's an incurably racist spanner? I mean, there's a number of things here. I'm not a massive fan of Trump, although I appreciate and understand the fact that at last there is someone in the White House prepared to stand up for the big guy, to protect the unpersecuted minorities like oil barons and billionaires, and leave no stone unurinated on in his effort to ensure America is at the vanguard of 20th century industries as this third millennium proceeds. But let's cut him some slack here. For a start, shithole countries, obviously an acronym, like brick countries. bricks. Shithole is states having immense trouble, having obviously lost everything. Like Haiti, as he mentioned. Unfortunate acronym use by Trump, the completely unique national treasure. As I said, like BRIC countries, or if you add South Africa, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China. Or BRICS if you add South Africa, or if you add South Africa, Hungary, Indonesia, Thailand, Hong Kong, Oman, Uruguay, Saudi Arabia and Ecuador, BRIC shithouse countries. but anyway, what I want to know, when are we going to hear the leaked audio of the rest of this conversation and Donald Trump's answer to his own rhetorical question? Well, luckily, thanks to our extensive network of Bugle contacts within the White House Inner Sanctum, we do have secret recording of Donald Trump's answer to his own question. So, Donald, why is it that you are having all these people from shithole countries come to America?
Because they are the people and countries most in need of the goodness and generosity of nations like the United States of America.
Right. I mean, that's nice to hear, isn't it? He knows that these countries need it. Countries like America, he continued.
Developed nations have been unbelievably lucky through the hands that fate has dealt them.
Right. Well, that's good. And he carried on.
And who therefore don't need to go around stealing good people from other countries. After all, for fuck's sake, America's a nation founded above all else on immigration and giving the people of the world the hope and dream of a better, brighter, and more prosperous future.
So there we go. I mean, and he concluded by saying,
I mean, come on, everybody, for fuck's sake, we need to grow the up about this kind of ship.
Such a different man sort of behind the scenes, you know, compared to his public face. It's so weird, those sort of behind the scenes recordings that you have access to exclusively here on the Bugle, Andy. It's very different.
But, I mean, there's a lot of vested interest in the media that don't want this kind of good stuff about Trump.
You are the Michael Wolf of the UK.
Yeah, anti-Wolf.
He did, to be fair, because I know this sounds a little bit hypocritical from us, but he did say this.
And, of course, this also applies to the United Kingdom.
Yep. So that's good to know that. Yeah, we're in the same boat.
And to Australia.
And to Australia, indeed. Yeah. And, I think he's aware of, Tom, you've done shows all about the immigration issue in Australia.
Thank you, Tom. I'm really on the subject. I am your biggest fan in the world.
That is so sweet. Oh, man.
Yeah. It's lovely, isn't it? Big fan of your work.
Nish, sorry. You can't say anything about this because you are the Muslim.
He's not denying it.
No. Good point, Donald.
Are you going to deny that?
I can neither confirm nor deny these allegations.
I think you're going to find it that you 100% are, in fact, the Muslim.
So just to be clear, these are secret recordings that you have that are somehow now having a conversation with us here on the Bugle.
It's funny how the world works these days, isn't it?
It's so odd that way. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Okay, where to start? I think the most concerning thing is that your heavily tampered Trump extracts are, in fact, no less coherent than when he speaks. It's a bit like his brain is doing that to the words that are coming out of his mouth anyway.
If you want to hear more of conversations with Donald Trump, I had a long chat with him about the Ashes, actually, on the last episode of the Unbelievable Ashes podcast, which is available online.
In other Trump news, he's cancelled a scheduled trip to London to open the spanking new US embassy, which has been described as a modern architectural marvel. Biggest embassy in the world. And do you know the reason he's cancelled it?
I would want to hear you say it.
Right. Well, the reason he's cancelled it is not because of any dispute with Her Majesty the Queen about something, about... You know, I know her refusing him to go out on a date with him or anything like that. Or dispute with Britain as a nation. Or the fear of millions of people protesting his visit. It's due to him being annoyed about property prices. He tweeted this. The reason I cancelled my trip to London is that I'm not a big fan of the Obama administration having sold perhaps the best located and finest embassy in London for, quotes, peanuts, only to build a new one in an off location for $1.2 billion. Bad deal. Bad, bad deal. A number of things from this. It was, in fact, the Bush administration that set this the wheels in motion for this. But, let's not let that fact get in the way of his fact that it was Obama, clearly. Also, the new embassy has a moat! It has a f***ing moat!
Unbelievable.
That should be right up Trump's alley, surely. It's twice as big as the old embassy, and in Trump speak, that means it's twice as good. It's basically the only logistically feasible site in London, given American security needs. It's the old site, its value was driven down by Grade 2 listed status rather than a bad deal by the Obama. Grade 2 listed status or, to be fair, it is known, the Barack Obama being a Muslim from Kenya law. And it's also, it is being redeveloped as a completely unnecessary luxury hotel. What part of this deal is not in your hitting zone, Donald?
It's got Trump written through it like the message in a stick of rock. It's unbelievable. But it is amazing that he's managed to blame this on Barack Obama when it has absolutely nothing to do with him. And it does concern me that by the end of Trump's presidency, the traditional motto of the United States will have been changed from E Pluribus Unum to Blamus Itus on the blackest guy.
I think people want to go to America from shithole countries to make them feel better about their own shitty countries. They just want to look around the US, check out the situation and go, you know what? Things in Yemen right now could be worse.
But it's good that he's managed to be put off coming to Britain for whatever the reason is, because, he's very worried about the state of protest, obviously, and there could be more tension coming up because there are some rumours that Prince Harry, whose impending wedding is obviously at the tip of all of our tongues every day in Britain at the moment, he might be inviting Barack Obama. But not what? Inviting President Trump.
Really?
And I say we go one further than that and we start inviting other people that Donald Trump would be upset to have there. So I think we should get Barack Obama, Rosie O'Donnell and the entire population of Mexico involved.
In just a quick bit of Trump's old friends news, Steve Bannon leaving Breitbart. Very sad for... fans of right-wing hate-mongering. Rumors,
goodbye, fascism's rose.
Rumours that he could be starting a new column in Teen Vogue magazine with some health, beauty and sex tips. Also hearing some chatter on the wires that he's being lined up for the Arsenal job. We'll report back on that next week.
He is. There is a space that's just recently opened up on the advisory board for British universities. Judging by their previous screening process, Bannon would walk in.
Now, the last person who held this job was an absolute... Do you feel like you could match that if you take on the role, Steve? Yes, yes, I could.
But we're looking for people who are for money.
We are over time already. Thanks for your emails, particularly to Axel Brown.
Yes!
Member of the GB bobsleigh squad. Currently waiting to hear if he's going to make the Olympic team. Good luck, Axel. And if you're listening, bobsleigh selectors, he's clearly by far the breakiest brakeman in your squad. Put him in the team. We will have the winter sports pun run that has been commissioned by Axel.
Oh my God, really?
On behalf of all British Olympians, past, present and future, in both Summer and Winter Games, will be delivered next week.
Yes.
At the Bugle Live Show at the Leicester Square Theatre on Thursday the 18th. It will feature me, Alice Fraser and Mark Steele on Bugle debut, so it should be a tremendous show. There are still some tickets available, Chris.
There are a few.
Correct. So do get them off the internet and we'll see you all there next Thursday. Thanks. Do keep your emails coming in to hellobuglers@thebuglepodcast.com and, of course, your Bilderberg competition entries. Before we go, it's plug section. My tour begins on Saturday the 13th, which is probably already passed by the time you listen to this, in Southport. Sunday the 14th in Salford at the Lowry. Then there's the Bugle Live Show on Thursday. On Friday, I'm at the Glee in Birmingham, and Saturday the 20th at the Artrix in Bromsgrove. The tour goes on until early March, and then comes this, my first date in Ireland for about 15 years.
Oh,
since,
great.
I had a bit of a contretemps with the town of Killarney. I think I talked about a few. Did I talk about that a few? I did talk about horrible flashbacks.
I love the idea of you having a beef with a whole town.
Tom, have you got anything to plug?
Oh, yes. Well, the good people of Australia can see my show Tonightly on ABC Comedy every single night of the week. A hilarious show about the news. Imagine that. Imagine doing comedy about satire and stuff. Every single night, 9 p.m. on ABC Comedy. We're on Facebook and there's a podcast and YouTube and all that kind of stuff. You can find us on Twitter at Tonightly if you so wish.
Nish, your series is coming back.
Yeah, The MASH Report is returning. It's also a satirical show, but it happens once a week because I do not have Ballard's frankly stankovite work ethic. that returns next Thursday at 10 p.m. on BBC2. And if it sounds like I'm reading those off the programme's official website, that's because I am.
So there you go. I think what we've all learnt is that if you do the Bugle, you get your own TV show. Just hang out with me. I'm the magic man. I'm the star maker.
It works out for everyone. I've got a TV show, Nish has got a TV show, Andy keeps doing the podcast. I mean, everybody wins.
You guys were going nowhere.
We won our 15%.
Like that loser Oliver. Nothing. Nothing until he did this show. Until next time, Buglers. Goodbye.